Good evening, everyone, and welcome back once again to your latest edition of The Great Canadian Songbook, the weekly show where we run through the greatest Canadian albums and eventually, one day, soon, we'll decide the very best one. I'm joined, as always, by my illustrious co-host, Keegan Gingrich. Keegan, how you doing?
I'm good. I like how illustrious always makes a comeback. I think it's always, sometimes it's lovely, sometimes it's illustrious, so I'm glad we're changing it up.
It's lodged in my brain in some weird way that when I'm like, and no offense, but I don't think it's you. It's just like a thing that comes into, thing that comes into my head.
You know what? Thinking about it, I am not illustrious. You're right. It's not me.
I'm also like only 85% sure I know what that word means. So that's even better.
It's just something that has like luster, right?
I assume so.
Yeah. Anyways, whatever it's, words, it's English.
Good, I assume.
Who's to say?
All right, Keegan. We're running through these albums at a pretty good pace. We're technically running through the same pace we always do, but it feels like a pretty good pace. But before that, I don't know. We've been chatting recently. Before we hop into it, so I'm just curious. You been listening to anything new this week? Anything exciting? Anything you want to share with the class?
This week, not a whole lot, to be honest with you. I get into this thing every year where I kind of make a playlist, kind of at like the start of the year. Like it takes me kind of a month or two to ramp it up and like really get it going. But now I'm sitting at about, I think 300 songs on this playlist. So about 20 hours of music. And I kind of rotated it, and that kind of sets the mood for the year. I think I've talked a lot about most of the artists that I have on here. A lot of Phoebe Bridgers, a lot of Julian Baker, Pine Grove, Hayley Williams, a lot of Kid Cudi, weirdly enough, Mac Miller, Frightened Rabbit, Frank Turner, Tragically Hip, Lumineers, a whole bunch of amalgamations, but the general consensus is like mellow, sad, kind of that sort of vibe. But I've just been putting it on rotate and kind of rolling with it, but it's okay. It's good. I like it. I think it's sometimes I've got like my super heavy pop punk, like metal playlist where I'm like, that's like meant for summertime. But in the other seasons, it's all usually pretty mellow. But yeah, how about you? What have you been listening to?
New Anderson .Paak, Bruno Mars came out. That's a good single. It's a good single. I think they're those. Oh yeah. It's real good. Those two are going to put together a real good album. I'm actually big. I like Bruno Mars, but I'm a really big Anderson .Paak fan. So, excited to see what they put together. I guess they've got a name. Silk Sonic is their like collaboration name. It's a good name. I listened to the new Drake singles. I actually like them. I think Drake's kind of picked it up a little bit since his like, I can't remember what his last album, would have been Scorpion. I guess his Scorpion's really bad in my opinion, but I like those couple new singles. And I've been listening to a lot of Bomb the Music Industry. Nice. I don't know if you're familiar. Yeah. Jeff Rosenstock's previous band before going solo, and those are pretty much just Jeff Rosenstock albums, basically. Yeah, so it's fun to kind of explore. I've listened to them before, but I was listening to them. Oh, I've also been listening to a lot of Bruce Lee Band. I'm familiar with Bruce Lee Band.
Like Bruce Lee? Like,
well, legally, no.
Okay.
But yes. Bruce Lee Band is a... you're going to laugh at me. They're a ska punk band founded in like the 90s by Mike Park, who is like a really big guy in the scene. Jeff Rosenstock actually plays, he's technically a part of their lineup now, but yeah, they're a fun time. You kind of get the vibes this weekend based on what I just said.
Yeah.
Asian Man Records is actually a really successful record label in kind of that area. The very DIY stuff. And it comes out in the music in good ways. Nice. Yeah, you should look at Bruce Lee Band if you want to see funny Bruce Lee like ska edits of like random Photoshops. They're funny.
Okay, intriguing.
Anyways, yeah, that's what I've been listening to. I was walking through like Walmart today listening to Bomb the Music Industry, and I was like, this is a weird vibes I got going on right now. I'm trying to decide what peppers I want to like, which ones are like the freshest. Yeah. So that's so yeah, no, I guess that's what I've been up to. Anyways, I feel like I always run off into this weird thing. But no,
that's okay.
We'll hop into it. This week we've got a good matchup this week. We've got Joni Mitchell's Blue going up against Buffy Sainte-Marie's Power in the Blood. Two obviously great albums. They've made it this far in the in the great Canadian Songbook Bracket Challenge, as we call it, I guess. I think as previously, we'll maybe chat a little bit about each of them individually, and if either of us have anything to say at large about the performers, we can. I guess we'll start off with Blue. I know this is a special one to you, so tell us about Joni Mitchell's Blue for you again.
Yeah, this one I remember right before we got into the original time we had it on. I kind of listened to it for a couple of days straight, just back to front to back, however you want to look at it. I really love the rawness of this album, the pure like folky, like emotional outpouring, I guess. It's not, you know, some fancy work of, you know, if we're talking 1971, what else came out in 1971? I think Pink Floyd's, I think Uma Guma, their live record, or no, nah, I can't even remember. Anyways, I'm just spitballing. But like
Uma Guma.
Yeah. Uma Guma. It's like super, I don't want to talk about it. Anyways,
neither do I.
They had like some really like weird stuff coming out in 71, but a lot of like, you know, good produced stuff too. Not saying that it wasn't like raw and powerful too, but I'm thinking like Sabbath, I'm thinking Zeppelin, like more powerful, heavy produced records. And with Blue, it's just super low key and super chill and super emotions. And I like that. I think that's what's really unique about it. It's not trying to be super in your face, not trying to sound super overproduced. It sounds the way it sounds and it sounds authentic. I don't think it tries to, and that was one thing that I touched on a lot actually throughout I think talking about it the first time. I just like the raw power of it. I think it's really great songwriting, and to be honest, like at the very base level, that's what I'll kind of say about it. I just like that it's very mellow, it's very chill, and it's very honest. And also, I just realized we're recording this on International Women's Day, and we've got two of probably the best Canadian albums from Canadian women as well. So, bravo!
Yeah, the bracket always gives these beautiful matchups. for me, I echo a lot of what you just said, and a lot of what we've already said in the past two times we've discussed this album. I think I think actually I've progressively enjoyed this album more and more as we've talked to it. I think the first time I was like, "This is good, but not for me." Mm-hmm. Second time I was like, "Or maybe is this for me?" And then I brought it back obviously today and this weekend, and I was like, Nah, this is good. This is good. Mm-hmm. This is really good. Which is always interesting for me, because I think multiple times in this kind of matchups we've had, it's been, oh, this is good, but we don't like it. And it's like, how do you do this? And I've had the full arc with this album where I was like, this was good, but eh. And now I'm like, oh no, this is great. I say it every time. The jingle bell, or not jingle bells, the Christmas song freaks me out. I think it is a jingle bells, actually. Never mind.
Yeah.
And I'm like, whoa, what are we doing here? It's a great song, but it freaks me out every time. I think another thing that really struck me on my third go around in this album is this is like, and this is obvious, I guess, but it's more apparent to me now. Is this like a little bit of a concept album in terms of like storytelling wise? Like, starts off and it's like very clearly like positive, happy relationship. And then like, obviously the last song is called The Last Time I Saw Richard, which suggests otherwise. And I kind of really like followed the narrative in this kind of most recent session of listening, and kind of unlocks my third eye of like the new, of like, yes, I am the Joni Mitchell understander now. I get it. This is, we've talked about it enough. This album's incredible. I'm comfortable saying it. I think it's interesting to think about it in comparison to the contemporaries at the time, several of which we've discussed, from Neil Young to Leonard Cohen, and even American artists, or I think James Taylor might be British, but people like that. And this album like persists past those. It's even beaten like one or two of them. Something special. I'll be honest, like thinking about it, it's like, oh, Neil Young, Leonard Cohen, Joni Mitchell. I was like, well, I don't know, it's gotta be Neil Young. And then after that, I knew he didn't like Leonard Cohen, but I was surprised.
No. You didn't like Leonard Cohen. I liked Leonard Cohen. You right there, sir.
I apologize. I think it's interesting and obviously a testament to the quality of this album that she's persisted past not only like great albums, but great albums kind of in the same vein as hers. And that's kind of how I'm feeling.
Yeah. Well, you touched on something interesting there too, that I think we've maybe talked about a little bit throughout some of the episodes, but I think what really makes like these Canadian albums and these Canadian artists so great is when they can tell a story, like when they are storytellers. I don't think you run into concept albums in Canadian music a whole lot, to be honest. Like I don't think it happens.
Except for our homies, Rush.
Except for Rush.
R.I.P.
Whole different thing. R.I.P. But you know, it's being able to tell a story and to go about like a certain narrative too. Like I bring them up a lot now, but like, I think of The Hip and I think of the Arkells, in their ability to like, even in one song, not just sing a song, but they're telling a story. Right. Like I think about, 50 Mission Cap, you know, telling the story of Bill Barocco for the Tragically Hip. I think of, Drake's Dad by the Arkells, which is a great tune. And they're telling a story and it's actually like a really good song. But like the same way that I think about My Old Man on this record, the last time I saw Richard, she's not just singing a song. She is telling a story. Like it's got a beginning and it's got an end. And it's not just, I don't know, what's a dumb song that just doesn't have a purpose and just repeats over and over. Sandstorm, Darude. There you go. It's doesn't tell a story. Doesn't even have lyrics. So anyway,
my favorite thing to watch is when you're like, I need to come up with a comparison. Whatever comparison you come up with, it's always the wildest. It's always like it works, but it's just like, that's a poll.
I just try to find something to spice it up a little bit, you know?
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. she tells a story. I listened to this music podcast called Strong Songs. He's just a musician and he like talks about different like songs, the way they're constructed and stuff like that. It's like actually good. It's not just like some rando. He's like a session like jazz musician. Anyways, but I was actually listening to an episode this week and he does like these Q&As and talking about how like artists actually rarely write songs from like their own perspective. You find a lot of like stories in songs. Like the references he pulled was like Space Oddity is like obviously not David Bowie singing about going to space.
Are you sure? You don't know.
Fair enough. Who am I to say? But I think it's kind of like an interesting concept that you think about, that like music always contains like, I would say all art contains some sort of truth about oneself, be it like positive or negative. But like the way in which that stories come across are not necessarily, it's not your autobiography when you're writing a song, generally. And I think the best songs come across this way. Like you can tell listening to this album that Joni Mitchell is like sad. She's going through like breakups and like kind of like early but not first, like kind of like love kind of thing. And you can see these stories and I think it's really affecting without it being like, I'm sad, my boyfriend broke up with me. I think there's merit in kind of those like straightforward anthems. I think they're easy for people to understand and they're like extremely relatable, but something, the way she weaves herself into these narratives that aren't maybe necessarily about her, I think is really powerful.
Yeah, no, I agree. You're totally on it there.
All right. So that's Joni's Blue. We'll come back to it. But then first we're going to hop in or seconds, but before we, whatever, we're going to talk about Buffy St. Marie a little bit some more. And her album Power in the Blood, we've talked about quite a bit. I think I when we first started talking about this album, months ago now, I did some reading that didn't make the cut of the kind of stuff, but I want to share it anyways. And I think this is important because we're talking a little bit more about legacies here. I think this is interesting. The first note is not the main point, but side is that we talked a lot about how, wow, so cool that she's embracing these like kind of new artistic mediums when she's like so old. It's basically the point that we're making. But I read that in the 1980s, Buffy St. Marie began using the Apple II and Macintosh computers as early as 1981 to record her music and later some of her own visual art. One of the first of the time to do so. Oh, I thought that was pretty interesting. I'll be honest, I didn't even know Apple computers were that old. So maybe that's just me. But
wasn't,
like,
just really quickly to interject, wasn't Bowie on that train too? Like, didn't, I'm pretty sure Bowie was super into computers for his music production too in the 80s.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but I would 100% believe that. Okay. Especially 80s Bowie, who is somehow even weirder than
that thought just crossed into my head, and I'm like, I'm pretty sure there's a couple people on that train. So that's cool. Okay. Cool.
Yeah, and then I've got another kind of nebulous thing that I think kind of speaks a little bit about Buffy herself and a little bit of American, a little bit of Canadian issues. Where do I want to start? In a 1999 interview at Dene College, St. Marie said, quote, "I found out 10 years later in the 1980s that President Lyndon B. Johnson had been writing letters on White House stationery praising radio stations for suppressing my music. In the 1970s, not only was the protest movement put out of business, but the Native American movement was attacked." St. Marie later said in the 2008 interview with the National Museum of American Indian that she had been blacklisted by American radio stations, that she, along with other Native Americans and other Indigenous people in the Red Power movement, were put out of business in 1970, notably for her release of songs such as "I'm Going to Be a Country Girl Again." As a result, blacklisted by, among others, President Lyndon B. Johnson, Richard Nixon, FBI Director and FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover.
None of that surprises me, but it's also shocking. But it's also shocking.
Yeah,
right? Like, whoa. But I'm thinking all three of those guys. I'm like, yeah, no, can't say that one's too surprising.
Yeah.
Like of the all best. People, like really?
Yeah. It's
dude, go after John Fogerty. Like what, you know, like damn, yeah, it's
very, very interesting stuff. Because I remember we talked a lot about we're talking a little bit about, or maybe I won't speak for you. I was a little bit like, wow, Buffy St. Marie is like kind of in the same class as some of the artists we've been talking about, the Joni Mitchells. We literally just listed off all the names like 10 minutes ago, mm-hmm. but I've never like really heard of her like in earnest. And there's like literally a reason for that, because she was suppressed in American radio, which is how you were a successful artist in that time, essentially. Yeah. I think that's interesting and relevant. What this is about Canada. I will never suggest that maybe like, see, Canada's good. I would not suggest that, it's particularly on Indigenous issues, but I think it's a relevant conversation, because we talked a lot about, oh man, they never quite broke out into the States. And usually the answer is, you know, whatever reason they didn't break out in the States. Here, there is a very clear reason why she never really broke out into the States. Well, considering even in the 80s, she won an Academy Award for Best Original Song. Like,
yeah.
After that, she kind of was not really given the space to be like a successful recording artist in the States.
Well, no, it's interesting that you bring that up too, because I mean, like, into talking about institutional discrimination and racism towards Indigenous peoples is a whole like different like conversation to get into. But it would be interesting to see that with relation to the music industry and to politics, because I mean, these are these are individuals who were, you know, directly marginalized by governments, and seeing how literally the president of the United States went, I don't want your music. That's a whole different level of institutional discrimination and racism. So that is really interesting. And to also add to that, I think one thing that we maybe didn't say, but like touched on a lot, is that like breaking into the American market and getting big in America thereby also makes you big in Canada. Like you can be
correct.
Like you can have notoriety in Canada, but then breaking into the US market makes you all the more legitimate and makes you even more popular in Canada. I don't know if that makes sense.
It's a vicious cycle because Canadians want to play popular music, but they have to play a certain amount of Canadian music.
Sure.
And so the answer to that is to play Canadians that have just become popular everywhere.
Yeah. So like, and so that totally makes sense. Like if she was completely denied entry into the American market, it's no wonder why maybe she wasn't as big as she could have been possibly. Right. Does that, is that kind of,
oh yeah, 100%.
You get what I'm going at there. So
So and it's very clear too, because certainly Joni Mitchell and Neil Young, especially, we're also kind of talking about similar issues, but we're not treated as harshly as she was. And the answers are pretty obvious.
God, no. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, sorry. Yeah. No, it's just, that's a very interesting thing to bring up. And like, I'm very intrigued by that, by the layers that might have.
I've read like 3 or 4 sentences of like this information. I would suggest people are interested, they should read up, because I haven't read it, but I imagine this is a very interesting, and you might learn, deep-rooted and pervasive issue, especially in like the 70s to like 80s of America, specifically surrounding J. Edgar Hoover, who basically just blacklisted anyone he didn't like.
which was crazy, because he was like completely like maligned and blacklisted by society for the things that came out about him. So it's just like, it's just shocking. That's all, how people can go to that extent. You know,
it's a thing. Anyways, I wanted to provide that context. I thought it was interesting, but we can hop back into the album.
Stupid politics.
If we want to talk about, I mean, these things, especially in Saint Marie's work, intersect 100%. I don't know if you have anything you want to say about the album, because now that I think about it, I don't have a ton I want to add, because I think we've kind of covered it.
Yeah, honestly, like in terms of background, I don't think I have anything to add. I think that she's a super interesting figure, and a super like amazing artist. Just again, I think that was the one thing we really were harping on the last time we were talking about this, is her ability to redefine herself, redefine her music. Like that takes a lot. Like it's one thing to write a good song, it's another thing to write a good song twice. Like the same song twice, I mean, sorry. And so I think that's really, really good and really special. In terms of the album itself, I think it sounds good. You know, like I didn't have any gripes with it the first time around. Listening to it this time, I will say, I don't know, are we getting into this part now? Can I talk? Can I?
Oh yeah, 100%. I think, yeah.
Okay. I liked it more the first couple times I listened to it. And that's not a discredit to how good it is, because it still remains fantastic. But I listening to these two back to back, okay, maybe I won't touch upon Joni Mitchell yet. I'm gonna keep staying on Buffy Saint Marie for a minute. What I'll say is that like I didn't like the country style songs as much, and that was probably about half the album, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
like the, you know, the kind of like country twang to it.
She really slows it down too.
Yeah, and it, again, not that they're bad, because I don't think they are. I just enjoyed them less than I did originally. Yeah, I don't know how else to kind of frame that. I think I kind of put it the way I wanted to put it.
I can add to that.
Sure.
I think I in some ways I agree. I think one of the biggest like positives that I had to say about this album, especially the first time, was just like the pure shock value of like having no idea what it was going to be like. I mean, like, wow, this is like so different and so interesting the way it works. That kind of mystique and like shock value does obviously die down once you've listened to it. And I think I can agree that when kind of that removed, it can be a little much in some ways, I guess, is maybe like a very simplistic way to say it. I think this album really hangs its hat on. I think this album is in some ways maybe more interesting to think about than it is to listen to. I don't know if that makes sense. I think Buffy is a super interesting figure, and what she does in this album is super interesting. And the end results are good. And in some cases really good. It's just, maybe not as, it's more interesting than I think you than enjoyable in some ways. And that's to say that I think it's very interesting and pretty good. Not that it's bad in either sense.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Like, I think the concept of the album, not the concept album, but the concept of the album, is in itself really, really cool. And I think you're right. Kind of warrants like its own thought, because like I kind of touched on before, like being able to redefine your music, that's crazy. You know, like people do remixes all the time and whatever, but like she literally went back, rewrote some of the lyrics to these songs, redid them in a completely different style. Like, it's not just like, you know, how some bands do like their regular versions of songs, but then do their acoustic version of the song. She literally did the opposite and just completely like toned up all these songs and added all these new layers to them. But yeah, I it's also not coherent.
I can agree
in a way of consistency. Like I think in some cases that can make an album really good. You know, when it's like kind of does all these different styles, does all these different things, like it's super cool. But typically if you're looking at an album from the point of being an album, you want there to be something that ties it together, but like in terms of like sonically, but it can't stray too far out of those sonic boundaries. And so if we're talking about like comparison, maybe we can talk about that a little bit now. I don't know, but you know, with Joni Mitchell's album sonically, you know what you're getting the whole way through.
Yeah.
Right. Like you go 1 to 10 and you're like, yep, it's going to sound similar the whole time, different songs, obviously different themes, whatever it may be, but you know what you're getting with Buffy's record. I think you go into it with this like super techno, like crazy, intro song. And I think, is it Power in the Blood that opens it up? Or So you got these like really crazy, like reiterations of these songs, but then it goes to like country and you're like, that doesn't really make sense. Yeah,
I would agree that Power in the Blood is the high in this album. I don't necessarily think that like the first song being your best song is a bad thing, but it's certainly the highest, in my opinion, the album gets.
Yeah.
And if that's pure like, whoa, what's going on here? Then I don't know. I don't think that that's a bad thing. Yeah. I think we've kind of settled on our thoughts on this album. In that case, I think we've already started it, but I think I think we're probably both on the same page here, but I would like to talk through kind of our opinions comparing these two. Yeah. So I think it's very interesting. I'll start because I literally was about to start anyways.
You go for it.
I think it's interesting because as we've talked kind of briefly, Joni and Buffy are in many ways contemporaries. However, we have albums from the two of them at completely opposite ends of their careers.
Oh yeah.
100% opposite. And obviously, Joni Mitchell, for a variety of reasons, hasn't really done much, both like as a musician, as just like a public figure in a long time. So she hasn't really had that chance to maybe reinvent herself. Maybe she doesn't want to. I don't know. But I think it's really interesting to kind of, in a way, you can compare them because some of these songs that she's performing, Buffy, are songs that she wrote. Like at the time, Joni Mitchell would have been writing Blue, which is super interesting. I don't know if I have like direct comparison points to make. I just wanted to like mention that I think it's interesting that we've kind of got two of the same, but who kind of went on to take very different paths in their musical and artistic careers. And we've kind of caught them at two very different points. Those are my I guess I'm not really comparing the albums in any way, like musically, but I think it is interesting that we have them both here. I don't think I have any like really direct comparisons.
Yeah. I don't really know if you can make direct comparisons. Like I think in their own way, each album is rooted in like heavily in personal identity, in very different ways. I think, I think for Joni Mitchell's album, it's rooted in personal emotion, personal identity. Whereas I think with Buffy, it's certainly rooted in personal identity and personal experience, but it's more interested, I think, in telling a story about the collective cultural identity and knowing a couple of the themes on the record, like it's trying to incorporate all of these things. Like, I think they're trying to, they had contemporary recordings of indigenous instruments and all these other things like it's more of a group project in a way. It's trying to tell a group story, is the vibe that I got from the album. Whereas with Joni, it's more of a personal story. I don't know if there's a right or wrong way to do it. I think it's certainly subjective and it depends on whatever you're doing. Very different records is kind of my take on it. Just very different records.
Yeah. I think I have one last take that I didn't really take before we decide and kind of wrap up is I think, Buffy St. Marie, the thing that I've said it again, but I've said it before, but I have to say it again just because I think it's so interesting. She writes songs. She wrote songs in the late 60s, early 70s about issues going on at the time. And she's not covering those songs. In many ways, she's updated them to reflect what's going on now. And in many cases, those songs did not need very many revisions. No. And it's tragic, but it's really kind of poetic, in like the worst ways possible that she's kind of doing it. And I think it's very interesting. A song like Carry It On is like the last song on the album. And it's basically like Carry It On, like as the name implies. And it's very sad, but it comes together to make beautiful music in some very sad ways. But yeah, that's kind of my final point on Buffy, because I think the end of the day for me, I think Joni's album carries a little more weight than this.
Yeah, and I mean, we've talked a lot about how, you know, the albums go on to influence things or what they might influence. I think we've had a couple cases of that too, where we've tried to be like, hey, it's a newer album, but let's see like what it could maybe do. I'm not convinced in the same way that Power in the Blood has the ability to influence or carry on interestingly, that last song, in the same way that Joni Mitchell's record I know has. We talked a lot in that episode, I think when we were first discussing it, about how much she how much influence she had on female artists and Canadian artists, and I think a lot of female artists all attribute a lot of their early listening to Joni Mitchell. I think we talked about Avril Lavigne specifically doing that in their matchup. And I think about the weight that record carries, and what it meant probably for, you know, at the time, I was going to say contemporary, but amongst her contemporaries, was probably the better way to put it. And I feel like that record is just, it's such a classic, and it carries a lot of weight for female artists particularly. And I mean, who am I to say at the same time, like, you know, I'm not a female artist, so who am I to say? But from an outside perspective, from what I have seen and from a lot of the attribution or attribute, I can't even think of the word, you know what I mean? To how many people credit her as being an influence, I just can't help but feel that if we're talking about what is the greatest Canadian record of all time, I think that matters and it carries weight. But to give Buffy credit, I think that her presence and her boldness to always be, you know, pushing the norms. Like if their entire career, she was, you know, into the entirety of hippie culture in that time was kind of speaking out against all the things that were going on. And she was speaking out against societal and institutional things that were going wrong. And also doing that as an Indigenous person in a time when they were still in and still are heavily marginalized in society by institutions that want to not see them succeed. You know, we just talked about Lyndon Johnson. You brought that up, and Richard Nixon. It's not to take away from her as an artist at all, because I think she's phenomenal. I think she has accomplished some amazing things, and this record is just a continuation of that, Power in the Blood. But the weight that the album of Blue particularly carries, I think, is more significant overall than Power in the Blood, I think, will be. I hope that articulates everything that I am thinking properly.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think both these albums are great, but I, at the end of the day, I think Joni is kind of outshines it a little bit. And to me, this is like, I kind of knew the answer that I was going for going into this, but it wasn't like a washout in any ways. I think it was like close but definitive for me going through this.
Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, it comes down to a feeling, right? And it is subjective, mm-hmm. and everybody enjoys things different. Like I always say that, but like, you know, like I could sit down and listen to Blue on repeat. I don't know if I could do the same with Power in the Blood, and that's ultimately what draws me.
Yeah, I agree. Well, in that case, we'll wrap up here to say that Joni Mitchell's Blue has beaten out Buffy St. Marie's Power in the Blood in this semifinal, quarterfinal match.
It's the
quarterfinal.
Confusing.
It's the quarters because we're doing four of these. So it's the quarters. It's easy. I should just know this. Yep. This quarterfinal match at the Great Canadian Songbook Greatest Canadian Album Bracket Challenge.
And hey, Power mm-hmm. in the Blood made it a long way. Like it went from the first round all the way. I think it beat out two albums, three albums to get here.
Two albums. Yeah, like, I will say our seating was interesting. We both Joni and Buffy were first rounders that we didn't seed above, and they both beat out their kind of original seeds and the and our like elite albums. So amazing run so far for them. Yeah, looking forward to next week. We've got music from Big Pink by the band going up against the Weeknd's Trilogy, which is always will always be an interesting matchup no matter what. I'll just have to find a spare 4 hours to really dig into that album.
Yeah, that's an interesting matchup. And sorry, my dog's barking, but that'll be a weird one to talk about.
I feel like we've had some really good matchups this this round, I guess. This is definitely the weirdest one, but I think it'll be good nonetheless. Believe it or not, they've made it through two good albums. And then after that, we'll be hopping into the semifinals. We'll be deciding who goes to the final round, and we're gonna have some matchups in the semis, to say the very least. Wow. We had a pretty decent matchup. We're kind of skewing a little older here. There's a bunch of boomers here talking about 50-year-old albums.
I mean,
back in my day.
Yeah, no shit.
No. No, I definitely don't argue with that. All right, then. Cool. Looking forward to next week. As always, you can catch us every Friday at 7 on Radio Laurier or on basically any podcast service you'd use, but we're definitely on Spotify because I've seen it with my own two eyes. I haven't looked with my own two eyes at anything else. So check us out there. And Keegan, what do you want to say to the people?
Be nice to other humans and also animals. I don't know why I was thinking that.
Okay, a little sappy. A little sappy, but that's okay.
And go listen to Phoebe Bridges, because I always tell everybody to listen to Phoebe Bridges. So just go.
Yeah, I was sending the Kyoto music video to my friend, and I was like, did you watch it yet?
So good, man.
Did you watch it yet?
It's so good.
So good. And to all my Mitski heads out there, Mitski's putting out a new track. Get hyped. She's scoring the soundtrack to a graphic novel. So
that's interesting. Wait, hold on. Can you unpack that? I just need to.
Yeah. I can unpack it as much as to say, yes, what I said was correct, because I don't have a ton of super. It's very strange. Mitski is she's an elusive figure in music. She put out like 5 albums in like 5 years and then hasn't dropped since 2018. Nice. But then last year she put out a soundtrack song for a very bad horror movie that I couldn't even tell you the name of. Song's good. But Mitski is scoring, or not scoring, but she's creating like a soundtrack to This Is Where We Fall, a new graphic novel by writer Chris Sikowitz and artist Vincent Kings. That's out May 5th via Z2 Comics. I don't really know how that works. I feel like they're just like, let's make some music. That's my guess.
Probably.
But yeah, I am starved for content, so I will take whatever they have.
Oh, cool. Anyways. That's interesting. Nice.
Yeah. So yeah. Shout out to Intermediary Experience. Anyways, this extended outro has been brought to you by Keegan and myself. And until next week, and all thy son's commands.
Is that what we're on now? Is it all? Okay.
Oh, I just pick a random one. Oh,
okay. I just didn't know. Okay. Anyways, bye. Sorry. My bad.